Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm joined now by Lynn Ricci, the president and CEO of the Hospital for Special Care, and Megan Gallagher. And what's your title?
Yeah, I'm the practice operations manager for our autism services.
Okay. And it is Autism Acceptance Month in the month of April. And, you know, I talked about something Alzheimer's related earlier in the show. And I think in some ways autism, I have three really good friends who have children with autism. And Matt Roy is our producer, who just raised $5,000 for ASRC last weekend.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, really amazing. And so it's in just about everybody's sphere. And so a couple of questions, and Megan, you can take it. Lynn, you can take it. First of all, in terms of diagnosing autism, is it still, like, it seemed like, you know, I'm 52. It seemed like from when I became aware to like now it was a rocket ship in terms of diagnoses. Where are we on that?
Yeah, and I think that's actually true. We have really seen a huge trajectory of kids being diagnosed. And I was even just saying the other day, back in the 90s, it was something that you'd only hear every once in a great while. And I think that there weren't very many people who were doing the diagnosing at that point. We didn't have it fully defined. Even the definition of autism has changed over the last 20 years. And now we're actually diagnosing 1 in 36 kids.
So are there more kids having it, or we're just diagnosing it better? That's the real question,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So I can, you know, maybe offer more of a historical perspective on how diagnostics have changed over time. My 28-year-old son was diagnosed when he was 2.5, and at the time I was a trained school psychologist, but you know, you never want to see what you think you're seeing in your own kid, of course.
Yeah, of course.
And at that time it was 1 in 150. Mm. And it was I didn't know a soul in the world who had a child with autism, where today the world is very different. As you said, really there's a big community.
So are there more kids with autism, or are we better?
I think both as well. I think that you know, diagnostics have gotten better. We've trained more professionals. That's really the biggest challenge, is access to a diagnostic evaluation and then ongoing treatment.
And the issue that gets political is causation, right? I mean, we've had this vaccine, folks, and I don't know the answer to any of this stuff.
We can assure you that it is not vaccine.
So what does the science tell us? I personally feel like, whether it's autism or not, like, I think processed carbohydrates, honestly, I have mental health issues in my own household, and I'm freely acknowledge it. I think our diets are really a huge issue, but I can't prove it. It's just my instinct.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think we can actually prove anything right now, and that's part of the struggle with autism in general, is that it's a variety of different factors. We know that there's likely a genetic component, but we don't know exactly what that looks like right now, and that there's doing more and more research on it all the time.
Right. I know that, you know, there have been speculation. Maternal age, and in fact, paternal age is even a
because we're having kids older and older.
Children older, so
yes.
I think that, and I haven't heard an age cutoff per se, but the older you are, the more likelihood, I guess, of all potential disabilities.
That's fascinating.
I think that's interesting as well, but also I just think the way we look at it is quite different now, and it's, you know, it truly is such a spectrum. We tend to see the kids who are much more involved, have much more challenging behaviors. That's our niche, right?
Right.
And I also, when you reference diagnostics, our psychiatrist in our inpatient program talks about, he really focuses parents on looking forward. Why it happened.
Stop blaming yourself.
Right.
And move
right.
On.
Stop trying to analyze it. Let's
you
move
see the
forward.
Pain. I've seen
you,
it in parents.
Oh, yeah.
It it makes me almost a little emotional. I want to get into your program.
Sure.
What you guys are doing at the Hospital for Special Care. Lynn Ricci, who's the president and CEO, and Megan Gallagher. Again, you got to tell me.
Okay. I'm the practice operations manager.
Can I just say operations manager?
Sure. That's fine.
I'm just teasing. We'll get into that next. We got to take a quick break here, get an update on traffic and weather. But we're here with Lynn Ricci, president and CEO of a hospital for special care, and Megan Gallagher, operations manager. Keep it at that. But I want to talk about what you guys are doing. And so, like, you talked, Lynn, you have a personal connection to autism. Mm-hmm. But at the hospital, what are you doing for with autism? Yeah.
So it's been sort of a fascinating journey, actually. We are relatively new at this since 2012 when we opened our program, and we opened in a really small way with one clinician 8 hours
were
a
you,
week.
Were you in the same role back in 12?
I was a COO at the time, chief operating officer at the time, and it was interesting how the opportunity came to us. It was sitting at a table with the then superintendent of schools from New Britain, listening to her list off the challenges that they had. And she said, can you guys do anything with autism? And I raised my hand.
So it didn't come from you, someone who had a child.
I like to think that my son sort of channeled through me and helped champion it. And honestly, we have an amazingly supportive board, and they were willing to go out, as I say, on a skinny branch with us into this really, unforeseen, uncharted world of autism. But that's what the hospital does. I like to say we do things that others won't. And autism is one of those. So I'll let Megan, who's much more involved in the day-to-day, kind of share, because she's been there a long time and been seen us grow tremendously.
Yeah, so like Lynn said, we started in 2012 with just a very small outpatient clinic. We were basically just doing diagnostics, and then we slowly started to grow our outpatient services. And then in 2015, very excitingly, we were able to open the first version of our inpatient unit. We opened a small unit of 8 beds. We only took 2 patients at first and really watched them grow. And then since then, that unit has expanded a couple of times. So now we just in 2020, fall of 2020, mm-hmm. we opened a brand new building that can now hold. We have now have the ability to take 20 patients at a time.
So the inpatient program, again, with the spectrum, it's hard to give canned answers.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Because every situation is different, and I recognize
Absolutely.
That. But I mean, what is the goal? I mean, people, they don't stay there in perpetuity. So
no.
How does it work?
So we see kids on their worst day. So we know autism looks different all the time. We know autism looks different within each child with autism. And we also know that that changes over time, too. And so many of our kids come in when they're having a particularly hard time.
Where the parents just can't.
Right.
Deal with it, right?
They come from ERs. They come with people. So why would a kid with autism be admitted to a hospital? They're hurting themselves.
Yeah.
They're hurting their siblings. There's a lot of behaviors that are just unsafe and truly unmanageable.
Right.
And
right.
That's what brings them to us.
And so we never want them to stay with us for a long time. Our length of stay is about 30 days or so, give or take. So we bring them in, we look at their behavior plans, we work with their outside providers, we work with changing medications. We have a really great interdisciplinary team that comes together to really look at the child as a whole. Our parents play a big part in this too. They come in and they train directly with our staff to try and make sure that we're carrying over all those skill sets so that they can do it then when they go home.
Right, so there's a protocol for when they leave.
Yeah,
absolutely. And then we recently developed a very unique program that can be used as a step up or a step down, and that is our partial hospital program. So sometimes kids are in the ER and we don't have a bed, so we can work to get them into our partial hospital program, which Megan can talk about what that program does. But it can also be used for that individual who needs a softer, more gradual transition back to home, and so that they can go into that program and still receive the support as well as receive the support of all of our outpatient services.
And again, we're talking with Lynn Ricci, president and CEO of the Hospital for Special Care, and Megan Gallagher, who, how long have you been there, Megan?
I've been here for almost 10 years.
And are you like an MSW? Like what's your...
Oh, I'm a speech language pathologist.
You are? Oh, wow. I used to have vocal nodules.
Oh.
I had to find my optimum pitch because I yelled too much.
Yeah, we do that too.
But anyway, that's a story for another day. It shows you I was a handful in elementary school. But getting back to the subject, you know, now that you've said since 2015 with the inpatient, how do you judge outcomes? And
yeah,
measure
so
them.
We too. Yeah, so we look at our readmission rate. We look at our the number of times that our patients have in-home services after the fact. We look at their ability to continue to follow the plan that we put in place. We do phone calls 60, 90, and 120 days following right. their discharge from
the
hospital.
Are you getting better? Are they getting, like, how is it progressing?
So autism's interesting, right? So it every child is different. And so we wouldn't ever expect that our outcomes continually grow. We just expect improvement for a certain percentage of those patients over time.
And we look at really, you know, you look at each case in and of itself. So you look at one of the things we measure is the parents tell us their stress level prior to coming in and after the program. You look at the targeted behaviors that the child's presenting and were we able to help manage those, minimize those.
It's kind of an unfair question. It's a moving target, right?
It is,
exactly. Yeah, no, I get it. I really understand that. And so in terms of geography, you're in New Britain. Like, does Hartford Hospital have this? Like where is this? Like, where? Like, how does this work in terms of other resources across the state or the area, if you will?
So there are no other inpatient programs for autism in the state.
In the whole state of Connecticut?
None.
Correct.
Not even in Fairfield County? Nothing?
No. There's also no other partial hospital program in Connecticut. There are other outpatient services, but again, this is a lot of words, but we're a patient-centered specialty practice. That's a designation. Yeah. By a national quality credentialing group, and we're the only one in the country still with that designation. So people say, why? Because it's hard. Yeah. It requires a lot of resources. One thing I think is unique as well about the hospitals, we're 82% Medicaid. So you were talking about living on a small budget. We are very, very dependent on our relationship with the state of Connecticut. We like to think of ourselves as partners with them. Many of the programs that we have at the hospital are unique and singular. So if we, for example, we have a pediatric unit that has little tiny babies on vents, we're the only place those babies can go in the state of Connecticut.
Is it a for-profit hospital?
No.
Okay. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I have a child with OCD, and when we started research, I'm like, why is it that there's so few people who do this work? And then you realize, like, one part of it is on the ground level, it's really, really, really hard work.
Correct.
On the macro level, I never really understood why there wasn't more done on it. And then if they do it, they don't take insurance and it's super expensive. And so some of it's inaccessible to average families. And so I have two questions. One is, like, so you said 82%
of our revenue Medicaid. Is Medicaid. Correct.
And so if a family can't pay, do you still take them?
Oh, we have... you know, most of our cases who are admitted. So if they can't pay, they're going to qualify for Medicaid,
right. You
know. And so we are agnostic to that when admission decisions are made. They're based on clinical acceptance to our program. And then another department handles the authorization. And Medicaid, honestly, has really embraced this program. They've supported us. The new building that Megan talked about, we actually got a $10 million grant from the state of Connecticut to build that building.
That voice is Lynn Rickey, who's the president and CEO for Hospital for Special Care in New Britain, and Megan Gallagher is an operations manager there. I guess my last question is, and we're out of time, which is unfortunate, but I talk to so many people in these kind of fields, and staffing is so difficult. And just tell me about how staffing is and how to respond, because my thing is if you want more paraeducators or this or that, you got to pay. Right? I mean, that's, to me, ultimately, if you want people to do certain work and it's hard, you got to pay them well. I mean, how is it going?
Right. So, interesting. Again, there's tons of opportunity in healthcare out there, right? It's a super competitive field. And we try to pay, and we do pay competitively, but we can't match the systems. We just simply
But is that the problem, really? Like
it's pay, but it's also in autism. It really is the lack of training opportunities. So we have found most of the providers that we've trained, so some psychiatrists, but mostly APRN extenders, we train them ourselves.
Well, and I think that it's not super glamorous work. Like, we're not curing autism, right? So we are helping to get rid of some of the symptoms that are negatively impacting the families.
Stabilize households.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. That's good. You're still going to have autism at the end of the day. And so it's not like, you know, you're an orthopedist who's going to heal your broken bone and be done with it or have a surgery and it's over. And yeah, I can see this really satisfying outcome.
Right.
So I think it's hard. You have to have the right kind of people to get into it. And that's hard to find.
Just very quickly, because we got to go. We're over here. If we have a lot of listeners. We have parents. We have grandparents, aunts and uncles. If they have any sort of inkling that their child or grandchild or nephew or niece should get looked at, where do they go first?
Ask questions early and go to your pediatrician first. They will do screenings there and then make referrals and push for that referral to a specialist.
Okay. All right. Good. It's great to meet you both.
Thank you.
Nice to meet
it's
you.
It's really, really important conversation. Lynn Rickey and Megan Gallagher from the Hospital for Special Care. Let's